tour visor is about.
Yeah, you should know that it's not just a standard visor that Lane Kiffin wears on the sidelines.
It's very different.
Yeah.
We're live. Welcome to the Eric and Erslang Show. Bo Hostler today. When you're one of the few people that has an easy answer when someone says, what do? Most people, it's kind of convoluted on this show, but yours is really simple.
Right. It's funny that you say that, because when people say, what do? And I say, I play golf, they say, okay, and what else? Or do you have a real job? Or, you know, is that your hobby or whatever? It's funny. But it's like, it's interesting to me. Some people don't understand that, like, professional golf is like an actual occupation.
They think you're basically just born on the 13th hole of a country club.
Correct.
How does that make you feel?
It doesn't bother me.
I guess I want to go through a lot of topics. First of all, we're outdoors. It's an unusual outdoor podcast.
Yep.
We're actually outdoors on what I'm told is your favorite golf course.
I'm going to call it number two behind Augusta. We played Augusta in college, and it was spectacular, and I think this is pretty darn close. What I like about this course is, you know, they're taking so many of these beautiful old golf courses and ripping all the trees out and making them wide open kind of now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this one has all the trees that really frame the course. You know, these are hundreds of years old, the trees. And I think there's something to that. I think it's fun to shape balls around trees. I think it's fun to have a really called for shot that you really need to hit because you don't have the option of hitting the other one.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. So to give it away, we're at Riviera. In Los Angeles, and yeah, these trees are immense. And what's funny, I mean, you know, I guess we can dive into this. A lot of people nowadays talk about, you know, Fried Egg, you know, this architecture podcast. I don't know if you check that out. You know, but even architects like Gil Hansen and Tom Doak are always like, yeah, we're going to rip all the trees out. And mm-hmm. I mean, okay, I guess that's what's supposed to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm just like you. Like, I like, you know, you played Isleworth.
Uh-huh.
You know the second hole there, the par three?
Yeah.
Like, it's fun because of the trees.
Yeah, 100%. That hole wouldn't be very good if it wasn't for those two trees on either side of the tee box, really.
Yeah. I'm almost wondering, like, you know, from a creative perspective, right, like, you play golf for a living, right?
Mm-hmm.
It might be pretty hard to excite you creatively on a golf course, I would imagine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, would you agree?
Yeah, I agree 100%. And by the way, I don't know much about architecture, and if I were to have an argument with anybody, this is just my personal opinion. And it particularly sticks out because so many of these classic golf courses are going back in that direction, because it seems like the last 8 or 10 years, there's been a lot of significant redos in golf. Would you agree?
Yes.
On serious golf courses, top 20 golf courses in the world. And it seems to me that a lot of them are going in that same kind of direction that you just described. And it's refreshing to come play one that hasn't gone in that direction.
Right.
And, you know, they talk about putting it back to its original whatever, right? Well, I mean, a lot of these trees were planted when it was built.
Right.
Potentially with the idea that they would grow and be big.
You would think they would be aware of that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying that. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I would think that a lot of these trees are meant to be there for a reason, and they're meant to mature with the golf course.
Right.
I don't know. That's just my thought.
So you are in a very small group of people that have played Augusta in general, but even mm-hmm. smaller, a group of people that have played there as, you know, a person who plays golf for a living.
Sure.
What describe the experience of walk? How old were you? You walk out there the first time. Mm-hmm. How many times did you pinch yourself?
Yeah, it's spectacular. We played there in college. We had some donors at the University of Texas that would take us there every year. It was pretty spectacular. And I think I was probably a sophomore in college when I went the first time. And it was one of the only times I've been nervous on a tee box.
Really?
Not in tournament play, or what I call league play. But yeah, it was amazing. It's one of the only courses, maybe the only course actually in the world, that I knew every hole before I ever was there.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned that, and you mentioned sort of, you know, like, I guess, I don't know what your words were, but a novice architecture, you know, whatever. A lot of pros don't seem to care about architecture as much. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like, you're treating it just like I'm showing up and I'm just trying to beat the course, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what's your mindset when you show up to a course? Are you just looking at spots? Are you you just talked about beauty, which is kind of rare, right? I mean, what are you looking for when you show up to a new place?
As far as for the tournament?
Or just as a golfer.
I think it's different when I show up playing a tournament and when I show up just playing. I'll give you an example. I went up this winter and played a course called the Valley Club in Montecito. You been there?
Yeah.
And I was absolutely blown away. And it's Alistair McKenzie design. I think it's probably been, redone a little bit. And it kind of has some feel of what I was just talking about where they opened it up. But for the most part, it's, kind of cut through the canyon and got some ravines and stuff. And it is spectacular. And I felt like I really had the opportunity to enjoy the course a lot more in that setting where we just went up with some of the boys and played some golf and, played 27 holes and had a nice dinner and went back to Orange County where I was spending a lot of the month versus had I shown up there to play a tournament, the first hole, I would have said, okay, where do we need to hit this ball? What are the places that we really got to avoid? Stuff like that. You know what I mean?
So when you go out for fun, you're not looking at spots?
No.
How is that? I mean, that's interesting to me.
See the pin, hit at the pin.
You don't care?
No, I mean.
A five doesn't even, there's no concerns about making a five, ever.
I don't care what I shoot in that setting. I mean, now if I'm getting ready for a tournament,
right.
But that's not going to be at a new course. That's going to be my home course practicing. But I'm saying if I'm going to go have a trip and, The point was to enjoy the day and be with some friends, you know what I mean?
Right.
Have some good food, play a good golf course, have a great experience. That's where I think I really appreciate a golf course, and I appreciate the beauty of a golf course. And that's kind of what I like about here is you don't really have the option to not notice.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, it's just there. You better notice it for performance and for beauty because you step up on holes like 13 out here.
Yeah.
Dog leg left. It's a bowling alley. It's a relatively wide bowling alley, but if you hit this ball left off the tee, it's going to go about 100 yards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think when I get to play a unique course for fun is when I can really appreciate the experience of playing that particular course and kind of, I guess you could call it the architecture of it.
You know, it's interesting. As I've never heard anybody talk about this, at least from your, class, right? From your point of view as a professional golfer, what you just said really struck me because I have found in my life, golf is less fun for me when I try to score.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically just kind of said the same thing, but I would never expect you to say that, right?
Yeah.
And I found that amongst all the other amateurs that make up, 9,000% of the game,
yeah,
they feel the same way. That when they go out there and try to score, it's like they're usually much closer to, being dissatisfied or whatever that leads to, breaking a club or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you experience that as well? And tie that into your experience of, other amateurs that you hang out with.
Mm-hmm. I would say most definitely that I enjoy playing the game of golf more when I'm not in a tournament. But I would say I enjoy my 5 hours on the course a lot more in a tournament because of the competition and what's at stake and stuff like that. And it's what I've prepared for. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But as far as like having fun, I have way more fun when I'm not playing a tournament. But that doesn't necessarily mean I enjoy it more. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm saying if I could choose to play a tournament or not play a tournament, I would play a tournament 1,000% of the time because that's where I get to see the fruits of my labor, right? I get to see my preparation and I get to learn from that. And I know that it's important to me and I'm hitting shots where I've worked 13 years to get on the PGA Tour, right? And it's like, okay, now I have a chance to play and this is what I've worked for and I continue to work for Monday to Wednesday before the tournament, and then now I get to see what we got. But as far as like enjoying the day, enjoying the beauty of a golf course, stuff like that, way more when I am playing recreational golf.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me as a filmmaker, right, I enjoy playing golf with no cameras. I have a great time. But if I had to choose, I would bring the camera and I would get, quote, less pleasure out of the golf, but I would have more meaning in my life.
Uh-huh.
As a professional golfer, where do you put the meaning on, right? I mean, you're 23 now? Is mm-hmm. that right? Mm-hmm. So, right, I mean, that's crazy to me, first of all. Like, when I was 23, I was probably, like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Do you have any perspective on how young you are versus how much is going on in your life?
Yeah. It's funny you should ask me that, because I've just thought about that recently. Because I've been in a spot at the beginning of this year, I'd say since the calendar year started, so, you know, a month and a half or whatever, where I feel like I'm playing significantly better golf than I have been in the last year. But I haven't seen any result for it yet. I mean, whatsoever. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right. But it's, you mean, like, on Sunday?
I just mean in general.
Right.
I feel like I'm as comfortable over the golf ball as I've been in a year plus. I feel great on the greens. I feel great about my decisions. It's just I haven't seen the results yet. And I had to remind myself that this is a career that hopefully is, I mean, it could be 30 years.
Sure.
Of real competitive play.
Well, Bernard Langer.
Yeah.
Could be longer. I mean,
yeah.
How many times has Bernard won on the Champions Tour? I think we got 30 wins on the Champions Tour.
Many times. But I had to remind myself that I'm 23 years old. And sometimes it's difficult because you see a lot of guys having a lot of early success right now, which is amazing for the game. And, you know, I've had some success, but I certainly haven't lived up to the expectations that I've had yet. But I have so much time ahead of me, even just this season. I mean, I think I've played maybe 8 events.
Yeah.
And I'll probably play 25 or 28 or something like that. And there's so much time. And you look back on moments like this, like, man, I just haven't gotten anything out of it. But it's such a – this month is so short.
Yeah.
But it feels so long because I'm playing golf every day and I'm grinding on the results. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is a long career. And you look at a lot of players – some of the best players in the game didn't have true success till their 30s, some of them.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just crazy, and it's different for everybody. And I feel like I'm on the verge of playing really good golf, but I also need to remind myself, like you said, that I'm 23.
Do you ever make decisions based on that idea that it's a long career?
Certainly.
Like what?
Well, when I dislocated my shoulder, I sure as hell didn't want to go have surgery and be out for a very extended period of time. And, you know, I played a tournament 6 months later, but I was not nearly ready to actually play and compete. I mean, I was a shell of what player I was the day before I tore my labrum, right? But, you know, there could have been an avenue potentially for me to try and rehab that. But it was like, look, I need to get this fixed. I want to be 100% healthy for as long as I play.
Yeah.
And if that means I got to bite the bullet for 6 months to a year, then I need to do it. And so I did it.
You know, I've seen a lot of young players have to make this call, and it just seems like it's probably one of the hardest calls to make, barring, you know, extraordinary difficulty, right? I mean, you're basically, because there are some options in there. Who do you take most of the advice from in your life around things like that?
Well, in that particular scenario, I mean, the doctor.
Sure.
I had a great doctor. And, you know, he said, look, You need to get surgery. I mean,
yeah.
There's a potential that you could really bust it and it could be okay, but you're just going to have the same issue down the road. You just need to do it. And so I was fortunate to have very professional advice in that area. But, you know, I have obviously a great family. I have a great manager. I have tons of great people around me. And ultimately, in truth, I listen to myself a lot. And I think I have a pretty good idea of what I'm doing for the most part. I think I'm good at looking at things for the long term rather than the next 5 minutes in front of me. And so, you know, I think I'm good at that. I'm a little bit hard-headed. I'm a little bit stubborn. But in fairness, I think for the most part, I make pretty darn good decisions and try and learn from any mistakes that I make.
That idea of listening to yourself, I have a couple thoughts around that, or a couple questions, really. It took me a long time to be able to do that,
yeah.
to be able to even hear myself, to understand, like, what was insightful and what was sort of based around fear or, you know, naivete. Has that just kind of been a natural thing for you most of your life?
Yeah. I think I've probably just been a little more mature than my years since I was young. I mean, I've played golf. I've been around older people since I was 11 years old. And so
is that like siblings or is that just
no? I just
social?
Mean people just like where, that I play golf with. I mean, I play golf with 50-year-old men when I was 13. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And so I didn't really have a choice. I've always been very curious. I ask a lot of questions. I try and learn when I play with people. I try and learn what they do. I try and learn about the basics and the nuances of what they do in their industry or their walk of life or whatever it is. And so I think I've been able to learn a lot. I think I've been able to learn from my own mistakes, as we all should. I don't think mistakes are necessarily a bad thing as long as you're actually getting some kind of benefit out of it, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like when I do what I want to do, I feel like I'm fully committed to that versus doing something that someone else wants me to do. I'm just not really 100% on board sometimes.
Right. Well, and that probably goes back to the most unique aspects of the game of golf, which is that you're a team of one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, you have a team. You have everyone that helps you win, but there's no one else on the mound. There's no one else at the plate. It's just Bo Hostler.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That gets me excited.
Yeah, it's great. That's what I like about golf. That's why I play the game. You're right. I mean, you have people around you that you hope can help you. But at the end of the day, if I hit a 6-iron in a bunker, I hit it in the bunker. I made the decision to hit the 6-iron, and I did the preparation to hit that 6-iron. And so in whatever avenue you want to blame it, it's still me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't say that this guy over here didn't do his job. If he's not doing his job good enough, then I need to find someone that's going to do it that good.
Well, and you specifically, for your caddy, you did not choose a veteran,
mm-hmm.
right? Tell me about that decision.
Yeah. So my caddy is a friend of mine that I've known for years now. And, you know, he caddied at golf clubs, but it's far different than caddying at a professional level. And, you know, I felt like the relationship with your caddy is superior in some ways to having the experience. I felt like I was able to kind of help him mold into what I was looking for as a caddy. And I think it's different for everybody. I think some guys would rather have someone that's caddied for 30 years, some guys wouldn't. And not saying that one way is right or wrong. I'm not saying that sometimes you might even change your mind, right? Some guys have had a caddy that's caddied for 30 years. And then, for example, you know, I think like Rory McIlroy changed from his caddy, who's he had tons of success with, to I'm pretty sure the guy that caddies for him now is just a friend of his, or was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe those perspectives change, but that's where I was at that time, and I think it's gone well. He's obviously a tremendous friend of mine, but I think he's done a really good job molding into exactly, you know, what I want him to do on the course.
What is the back and forth like between the two of you? I mean, a lot of people listen to this podcast may have not ever even played with a caddy.
Sure.
Obviously. Much less, right, been in a situation nearly like yours. What is that relationship actually like on the course, on the road?
Yeah, I would say that anytime you're around anybody for a significant period of time, you need some time away from each other, and then obviously we spend a ton of time together. So he's a great friend of mine, but at the end of the day, when I'm playing, you know, I hold him accountable, I hold myself accountable, and I'm there to win and to compete and to be the best that I can. And so, you know, that friendship on the course, in my opinion, it goes away for those 5 hours. It's like, hey, we're here for a reason. We're here to be professional. We're here to do things appropriately. We're here to be smart and make right decisions, right? And so I feel like we, you know, I'm hard on him sometimes. I try and keep it light on the course, but at the same time, I'm very competitive. And so it's difficult to describe that actual dynamic. And truthfully, I mean, it changes sometimes daily, right? I mean, just like anybody's relationship with anybody else. But I think we have an extraordinary friendship. I'm really glad to have him on my bag. He's done a phenomenal job. And, you know, it's cool to have a friend of yours in battle with you.
Tell me about your friendship and kind of how the decision to work together, you know, the genesis of it all, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So he actually worked at I grew up at Mission Viejo Country Club. He worked there in the cart barn, so I knew him from there. We had some mutual
friends.
He's a
cart barn guy?
He was.
He's not anymore.
No, okay, he's on tour. And then, so we've just had mutual friends. He played golf at Saddleback Junior College, which is right near where I grew up. And he was up working at Eugene Country Club. And I played the Pacific Coast Amateur, and he caddied for me up there. Did a good job. Was wearing a... what looked like a beekeeper outfit. It was kind of a strange week. We were up there in maybe August, and so the caddies there, they needed to wear similar to like what the guys wear at Augusta, the white jumpsuit type deal. Well, that week, believe it or not, in Eugene, Oregon, it was like 108 degrees or something. It was, which is like unheard of. I mean, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's like high desert or a high forest.
Yeah,
right?
It was strange. I mean, I think normally in the summer it's in the 80s, maybe the 90s, and it was so hot. So he's wearing this bucket hat. He's got a full-blown towel over his head, just blocking all kinds of sun and stuff. So it's funny for me to look back at it and see it. But he did a nice job. We had a hell of a time. I played well. And, you know, I was turning pro, and I said, you know, come loop for me. He said, yeah. Sure enough, I injured my shoulder. I was like, okay, well, just put you on delay there for about 6 months. But yeah, he's done a nice job. We started with no status anywhere. Coming out of college, I left after my junior year, and then he's caddied for me in those sponsor exemptions that I had at the beginning of, I guess, 2017.
Yeah.
And then I got status on the web.com through a Monday qualifying and whatever. And then, he's been on my bag for half a year on the web. When I got my card, he caddied for me all last year, and then this year.
So was he with you at the U.S. Open, the first one?
No, my godfather caddied for me before I turned pro.
No way.
Oh yeah, legend.
Legend.
Oh yeah.
I mean, come on, I didn't realize that. Your godfather's on the bag.
Yeah, he caddied for me in U.S. Juniors and U.S. Amateurs, U.S. Opens.
Was that one of the highlights so far of your career, you think?
Certainly, yeah. It was an amazing experience. But I mean, it's funny. I mean, just the competitor in me. I finished 29th in the tournament. I didn't win the damn tournament. So
sure,
I had some brilliant moments, and particularly at that age, it was phenomenal to do that. But looking back on it, like when I finished the tournament, I was pissed off.
Well, I'm sure Rory was pissed off after, you know.
Yeah, I'm just
the 10th hole when he was 21.
Yeah. No, you know what I mean, though.
Yeah,
I'm there to compete and win. I don't care what age you are. You're competitive people. Everybody out here is competitive. Not everybody, but for the most part. You don't get out here by accident being okay with finishing 40th, because finishing 40th on the web.com tour doesn't get your PGA Tour card.
I can't tell if you don't want to talk about it or not. Do you want
to? I don't like to talk
about
it.
You don't like to?
No,
because everybody
makes it seem like the greatest thing ever, and I had some awesome moments, but it's like, it's one golf tournament. I finished 29th. Okay.
Everybody leave me alone.
I was 17 years old. It was a phenomenal experience.
Right.
It was something that I'll always look back and enjoy the experience, but for me, it was more validation that I could compete out there, which was very positive. But as far as like looking at the result of the tournament, I wasn't stoked about it.
No. All right. Well, let's drop it.
You know what I mean?
I'll stop talking about it.
Yeah. But you understand what I'm saying. It's like everybody, when I talk to them about it, they're all excited about, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. I'm like, okay, well, if you like T29, then yeah, it's the greatest thing ever. But I had some amazing moments, and I learned a lot of really positive stuff from it. And I think it's made me a better player, honestly.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, from a media perspective, right, people are going to come at you and they're going to say, how do I know you, right?
Yep.
And they're going to look at all of these things. And that's, for better or worse, one of the reasons why they're going to know you.
I 100% agree with you. And I respect it, by the way. It's just for me as a player, as a golfer, and as a competitor, it was something for me to learn from. And it's made me a better player. And that's why I look at it in such a positive light.
Right. I know one of the ways I got to know you is I'm a huge fan of the Tourvisor.
Yeah.
As are, I'm sure, you know, a lot of fans of Bo Hassler, right? So, what, you know, because there's not a lot out there on tour.
Yeah. I don't quote me, but I would be surprised if there was maybe anybody else that wears the old school classic Imperial Tour Visor.
Imperial.
Yeah.
Do you work with them or no?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
Uh-huh.
So, you're Adidas, Imperial, and what's on the wrist here? TaylorMade. What's on the wrist here? This is
Don't worry about it.
He's not going to talk about it.
I bought this one.
You, hey, it's okay to buy a watch.
Yeah, that's all right.
So if you buy... There's a lot of
I saw your wrist action too.
We got, you know, I'm into watches. Colt's into watches.
I am too.
We'll wait till we power down. How long have we been going here? I do want to hear about everybody. Hang on a second. All right, cool. We're halfway through. We're gonna go to a commercial break from Adidas. Everybody, stay. Do you have any words about Adidas you want to say?
Yeah. You know, they've in college. We wore Nike at University of Texas. And, you know, I'd wear some Adidas stuff in the summer and I liked it. And I feel like they've really made some serious strides the last few years as far as performance, but also kind of the look. They're going in a little bit more of a traditional look, which I like. Obviously wearing the tour visor, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm not all about wearing super bright colors or super funky stuff. I like to keep it pretty chill. And they've been able to implement kind of that style into a very performance line, if you understand what I'm saying.
Sure.
They've been able to kind of mold both together, which for me is ideal.
Right.
And it's been super nice, obviously, working with their team. They take my feedback seriously. And it's nice to be heard. And I've noticed some very positive implementation of what I've talked about. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah. What size you got? These like a 13.
No, 10 and a half.
10 and a half?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, pretty standard.
I don't know why they look so big. I don't know. I don't know. Okay, anyway, we'll be right back. Everybody stay tuned. All right, folks. You know my favorite golf shoe, don't you? I think you do. It's Three Stripe Life, y'all, and that means Adidas. And so anyway, I just wanted to tell you that when I'm a big fan of the Tour 360, obviously. And they've made a huge update to the Tour 360, and the two letters that it's concerned with are the letters X and T, okay? The Tour 360 XT changes the game, okay? It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round. By the way, a light golf shoe is what I'm all about. A heavy, there are some other companies making heavy golf shoes, and I'm just like, by the way, I weigh enough. There's enough going on. I'm carrying a golf bag. I'm carrying my team. Tour XT changes the game. It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round, and it still features that Boost, y'all. Do you know where Boost comes from? And Boost is cool because it only comes in black and white. I don't know if you noticed that. And actually, the guy who made Boost like was going to bring it to some other, you know, they were shopping it around, and everyone else said no. Adidas was like, I'll take that Boost, even though it's only black and white. And what did Adidas do with it? They made it awesome. I'm looking at Boost right now on my feet. Boost on my feet. And it has an X-shaped traction system that gives you insane stability. Literally, it's not sane. It's literally crazy. Your feet will literally be like, I'm crazy. Best part, it comes in spikeless. Ooh, that's tight. The first spikeless ever in the history of the Tour 360. Crazy comfortable and perfect for the course. Get your pair at adidas.com. Thank me later. Follow Adidas Golf for all the latest and greatest. That's all true statements right there. Check it out. Go support Adidas because they're a good company, good people. All right, light it. One of the things that comes up when we're trying to learn about Bo Hostler is you're fascinated with real estate and business. What is that? Is that just kind of like, is that because that's where you were? I don't know. Tell me why.
Well, I like to learn about different ways to make money. And to me, that's something that's, it's fun. It's not even about the actual, like the compounding of money. I like the concept of learning about it and different ways to do it. And that's kind of what I was getting at when I was telling you, you know, I like to pick people's brains, right? Fortunately in golf, we get to play with a lot of people that have had some serious success in so many different areas. And so I like to learn about it. I like the concept of, like for real estate, it's nice if you can have a property that's going to appreciate. And then if you're renting it out, you're actually having income on top of that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when I talk about stocks and bonds and stuff, I personally, you know, there's so many things to it that I haven't really taken the time yet to fully understand.
Right.
And I like to really understand stuff. So
most golfers kind of spend their lives going crazy over this.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously I have my godfather that caddy for me is my financial advisor.
Oh, okay.
He's at Merrill Lynch and he obviously takes great care of me. But as far as my personal interest, I think it's fun to talk about different properties, kind of what the properties do, and different strategies and stuff like that. I think it's fun.
As far as strategy, I mean, teach me something, right? Like as far as strategies, what do you even mean? Like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay, so, you know, you talk about, you have your residential real estate, and then you have your commercial real estate. And you have people that are, or companies that are, some are owning their real estate that they have their offices at. Some of them are doing these leases. Some are, I mean, you wouldn't believe, you know, super, super long-term leases, guaranteed leases. And for a property owner, that's enormous. It's guaranteed income on that property for X amount of years, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I like the idea of taking something in general that's old and decrepit and turning it into something kind of revived and new.
And you mean quite literally like a warehouse or something?
Yeah, I'm just talking in general. I mean, isn't it kind of a cool concept? Let's just talk about residential homes. Isn't it kind of a cool concept to take a home that looks all beat up and turn it into something cool?
Yes.
It's nice, right?
Yeah.
I think it's fun. And so that just interests me. I think it's beautiful to turn something from old and run down from the 60s or 70s into something new and fresh and even implementing different styles, right? And so just from a non-financial point, I'm just talking about just reviving
just creativity.
It's
yeah.
cool, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can do that and make a little money, I think it's kind of a cool deal.
It's like the art of real estate.
Yeah.
Like choosing where you live as like a creative expression.
Yeah, I mean, or, you know, just designing. I've been to so many cool places now, and to see the different types of architecture and different styles and stuff like that. You even look up on the hill here at Riviera, right? And it's like you could go 10 houses in a row, and none of them are remotely close to the same thing.
That's LA, right?
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I like to learn about all kinds of different stuff, and business in general, and the art of making money and compounding money is to me very interesting.
Yeah. Was that interesting to you in school, or is that sort of new?
No, I've always been interested in it, and I studied finance at Texas.
Yeah.
And in truth, I feel like I've learned significantly more by picking people's brains than I did ever in a class there.
Interesting.
And that, because it's conceptual. You're talking about numbers versus I'm talking to someone who started from nothing and created serious wealth or success.
Right.
I think that's a cool concept, and it's, you know, you can talk about that with baseball players that have come from countries that are dirt poor, or you can talk about people that have built a real estate empire, or they've created a tech company or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, and you're kind of going back to like maybe some type of like, you know, ancient type of storytelling with a purpose, right? Mm-hmm. Like tell me something about yourself is supposedly one of the best questions to ask somebody in an interview or in a random, you know, on a random tee box.
Right. Yeah, I really enjoy learning about things that I don't know.
Right.
And it's fun. It's fun also to just hear the story itself of how some things have happened, right?
Right.
Some people have been very successful by luck, right? They've had a good idea, but you have to have that spark of what actually clicked to where the ball got rolling.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's fun to hear stuff like that, and it's fun to understand, you know, it's interesting to me because so many of my friends obviously just go to college and then they're looking for a job. And, you know, just off the top of my head, it's like, man, I can't really think of that many things that you can do. But then you're like, okay, well, who makes the stop signs? Who makes the stoplights?
Yeah.
Who makes the concrete?
Like, basically everything's a job if you look
everything.
Around. A tree. You got to prune it.
Trim it.
Trim it.
That's what I mean.
Remove it.
But think about all those things. I mean, you talk about guys that make tons of money in mobile home sites.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
That you just never would think of that people have success doing.
Everything's a racket.
Yeah. Porta potties.
There's one right over there.
That's right. I'm going to use it after this.
You don't have a ring. You're not married. What, you got a girlfriend? What goes on?
I do have a girlfriend.
How do you have a girlfriend on tour?
That seems tough. It's tough. God bless her.
How'd you guys meet? Are you comfortable talking about it?
Yeah.
You don't have to. Don't say anything you don't want to say.
Nope. She's, we knew each other in high school, dated in college. I mean, you have to have the right type of girl out. I would say probably in any professional sport, but maybe in golf as much as anything. I mean, we travel so much.
She comes with you?
No.
Really?
No, she works.
She's in Austin, right?
No, she's in California where I grew up.
Oh, wait. Yep. Okay, but where do you live?
I live in Austin.
Okay, that's complicated.
I live in Austin, yeah. She comes out to some tournaments on the West Coast. She'll come for the weekends when she's done with work, and she will, you know, travel out and then I'll try and come and see her, you know, when I can. But
right.
it's tough. You got to find someone that's independent, that isn't particularly needy, right? It's difficult. I mean, it's hard to say, but it's just the truth. It's
totally.
for a successful relationship. I don't have the time, honestly, nor the mental energy. I mean, it's a grind out here.
It's a grind.
And so I'm tired, and I don't have the time to sit on the phone for an hour every night.
What's your typical, what's your busiest day of the week that's not a tournament day? Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday probably.
What does Wednesday look like typically?
Okay, I'll just run you through tomorrow. So I'm taking off at 12:20, assuming the weather is good, which I don't know if it's going to be. But if it is, I'm probably going to come out. My coach is in town. I'm going to work with him for an hour and a half on whatever particular part of my game I need to tune up before Thursday. But I'll do that. I'll play our pro-am. That's going to be easily a five-hour round. I will see, before I see my coach, I'll see my physio and get a warm-up. Take about 30 minutes. Then I'll play my pro-am. Due to darkness, I'll probably not do anything afterwards just because I'm playing in the afternoon. But I'll go see my physio again for another hour. I'll eat some dinner, and I'll get to sleep.
That's it.
I mean, it's a busy day. When people that don't know professional golf think golf, they're like, okay, your day is probably a five-hour day. It's my day from the time I wake up and really start my golf process. It's probably close to 9 hours.
And on like an off week, what does a practice day look like? Is that a grind?
It depends. Depends what you're doing.
You can easily overdo that, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's, you have to kind of see where you're at. Sometimes you're going to want to go and like literally not unpack the clubs.
Whoa.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're tired, this will be my fifth week in a row. And so I actually feel really good. And the cool part about playing over here, I feel like I can do five in a row because they're all pretty darn close. The travel's not that bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you're going back and forth cross country for a few weeks, you're pretty darn tired.
Yeah.
So I might not take out the clubs for a few days. But when I'm home, I mean, I'll try and get some competitive games with some other pros around. I will.
What does that look like?
It's funny. I don't. We'll just, like, for example, Nick Watney and Andrew Landry play at the same club as I do called Spanish Oaks in Austin. And so we'll play, and we'll get another member that's a really good player, and we'll play either a team game or individual game. But it doesn't have to be high stakes. It's just something to get competitive and to know that your competition's legit.
Right.
And I don't have to give 20 strokes. I'm playing with a guy that I can play straight up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's nice to have a little competition and to have, going back to what I was talking about earlier, a little bit of meaning on the shot.
Right.
Versus me going and playing by myself for 9 holes. And it's like, okay, well, I really could care less if this 6-footer goes in, with the exception of I just want to see it go in.
Right.
But to have competition is nice.
Yeah.
And so I'll do that. And then kind of what I was talking about with tomorrow, I'll work on whatever I need to be working on and try and keep all the other tools sharp as well.
Right. Do you think that there are many ways, both, I mean, I guess if you're not in the actual moment during a tournament, or also if you're not a golfer, are there many other examples of life where things get that intense, right? Where the 6-footer counts to the degree that it really, really counts,
mm-hmm.
right? Have you experienced that in other parts of your life? I mean, I don't know if I really have.
No.
It's so unusual, and golf is really, really weird like that. Because also, sure, like, you know, In a lot of other sports, it's reactionary.
Mm-hmm.
So in golf, you're just like literally carrying your luggage of ideas to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do to like block it out, or whatever you do with the mental game?
In the tournament?
Yeah.
Well, I think you become, there's two things. A, you have your routine that you do no matter what. And I don't even think about it. I just do it.
Hmm. You're talking about like a 30-second routine or
I'm
something?
I'm just saying when I hit a shot.
Yeah.
I for example, when I putt. I read my putt. I use the green book personally, so I'll do that. I have my read. I'll line up. I'll put my putter down. Or sorry, I'll take two practice strokes looking at the hole. I'll put my putter down. I look at the hole 3 times and I putt. But it doesn't matter whether I'm putting to win the golf tournament or I'm putting on the putting green. Doing the same thing.
It feels the same? It doesn't feel the same.
No, it doesn't feel the same, but if you can get to where you don't think about it, it's just putting.
Right.
And so that's part of it. And the other part is the more you have pressure putts, the less pressure you feel.
Right. It's just a relative thing.
Yeah. And so I know you did a podcast with Cameron McCormick. He's my coach. Yeah. And I was talking to him yesterday. And it was a kind of an interesting thing that I never really put into perspective, but I thought about it. And I was telling him that sometimes I will feel more pressure playing to finish out an average week than I'll feel playing to win a golf tournament. And I'll tell you why. When I have a 150-yard shot on the 18th hole and I'm in 7th place or 20th place or whatever it is, I'm trying to turn something. Maybe I wasn't hitting my irons that good that week, and it's like, man, I'm just not real comfortable right here. And I just want to get this over with. I want to hit a good shot and get out of here. Versus I'm on my game and I am on autopilot and I'm not even thinking about it. And I'm just going to go let her rip because I know it's going to go where I'm looking. You know what I mean?
Right.
When you're playing to win a tournament, you're playing damn good.
Right.
And you don't even need to really think about what you're doing because you're just zoned in. You got your swing dialed in or your putting, whatever it is. Versus when you're grinding out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because every shot's important. And I had a buddy of mine run some numbers last week.
Okay.
Just conceptually to think. Because I feel like I haven't been making particularly good decisions on the course lately. Kind of going back to what I was telling you, how I feel like I'm hitting it well, but I've been just making some errors, course management errors, and it's been really frustrating me. So I had him run some numbers. Last year, had I played one stroke better per tournament, in every tournament.
So a quarter stroke
per day. Quarter stroke a day.
Which is a lot.
No, it's not. It's one stroke per tournament. You're going to hit the ball 275 times this week.
Okay.
Ish.
Okay, one stroke. All right.
One stroke. I'm saying, you know, I didn't want to run the numbers on one stroke around because, like you said, that's astronomical. That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
But I think one stroke a tournament is realistic and doable.
Right.
I would have made 1.3 million more last year.
Okay.
Which is wild.
That's a lot.
But going back to what I was saying, when I think about trying to grind out a top 15.
Yeah.
And I'm not feeling great with my swing, and I want to get up and down from a buck 70 on the last hole and make birdie for that one stroke.
Yeah.
That's where I'm a little bit like, all right, anxious.
You want to, right, I see what you're saying. By the way, what are you hitting a buck 70?
Usually 7-iron-ish.
But you
understand what I'm saying there?
Yeah, and I'm going to try to follow it up because I want to learn a little more about what you're saying. So what you're kind of saying is, does this kind of have to do with the idea that when I'm on my side, when I'm watching golf on television, I'm seeing red zone. I'm seeing just the best players
correct
on their best days, on their best holes.
Correct.
And in that moment, you're saying that you're basically in your own little red zone where you're just like, you're just seeing the spot and hitting it.
You're dialed in.
You're not thinking, there's no thought. There's no club face. You're really not thinking anything outside of just simple calculation and then go, pull trigger. Mm-hmm. But when you're not on TV, you're like, where's the ball going?
Yeah, there's a reason you're not on TV. Well, not necessarily where's the ball going. I've had weeks where, for the most part, I putt really well.
Yeah.
And so I don't think about my speed. I'm just usually have really good speed. Well, last week I was freaking hitting everything way by the hole and I'm literally thinking about my speed. So that's the stuff that will make me anxious and nervous.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
So I have a 30 footer on the last hole and I want to make it, but I really want to get down to 2 for sure. It makes me uneasy where I'm like, okay, well, my speed's been jacked up. I got to be like conscious of my speed here. You know what I mean?
So you're telling me that, is that happened last week?
In certain scenarios, yeah.
So you're literally pulling in different thoughts to...
Well, I'm telling you, if I just went natural reaction, I'm going to hit seven feet by the hole. So we're not going with that.
Did you determine in this particular experience why it was going so far by the hole?
Some weeks it's just... it's golf. It's hard. Some weeks you're spraying the driver. Some weeks you're hitting it straight. Some weeks you're hitting it pure. You know what I mean?
Whoa.
So it's a weird concept where I probably just blew your mind where it's like, why? How could you possibly be more anxious over something that's you're not playing to win?
See, what's funny is actually, obviously we're different in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But we're probably very different in that way because the idea that you would be more comfortable in a pressure situation, mm-hmm. is foreign to me.
Yeah.
Right. I'm better when I have nothing on the line and I'm probably going to shoot 85.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can swing freely and then I start really hitting the ball.
Yeah.
And it's like, so I'm like double-double. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, I'm actually, now I've had seven pars in a row, which for me is like pretty good.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's, I just think that when you're playing really well and you're in contention to win the tournament, your confidence is very high with whatever you're doing. I mean, there's a reason you're in contention, right? And so it's like, just keep going with it. But the reality is in golf is that's pretty rare. You're not going to be firing on all cylinders very often. And so I'll give you an example of, like, last year I had the 18th hole at Houston. I ended up losing the tournament in a playoff, but I had a 30-footer win the tournament on Sunday on 18. And I'm putting. It's a tough speed putt.
Yeah.
I'm going uphill and then flattening, even going downhill.
Yeah.
And it's difficult because the ball's running away, so your speed's got to be right on. But I had this 30-footer, and I didn't even have to think about my speed because I my speed had been great all week.
Well, yeah, and at that point, you're probably – are you putting to make, or are you kind of trying to be safe?
I'm putting to make, but I want to make it the right way.
Right.
I want to make it with it going no more than 2 feet by the hole.
Okay.
And I had a great putt. Honestly, it should have gone in the hole, but it left me this. It left me 4 inches.
Yeah. Great putt earlier
but
in the
I
day.
Didn't, but I didn't have to think about it. Versus had I had that putt last week at Pebble, I would have been like, all right, well, let's go ahead and pretend this hole is 5 feet short. You know what I mean? And so that's where I'm getting at. It's like that was, if you were to think of just pressure, that was the biggest pressure of my life on the golf course. But it didn't faze me because I had full confidence that I could pull it off at that time.
Have you found a gimmick that works inside your head on the golf course?
What do you mean by gimmick?
Some people say they visualize that the hole is huge. Some people say that, you know, they pretend they're already OB.
No.
Nothing.
No.
What is it like?
There's no way you've ever heard a pro say that.
Bubba says it. Bubba says
that
it.
That he pretends he hit out of bounds?
Didn't he say that he's the one that pretends he's OB? Oh, no. You know who said it? No, I'm sorry. It was John Smoltz. Not a pro golfer, but a pro baseball player.
But he said it about golf.
Yes.
He's a pro baseball player.
You're right.
But he's a good golfer.
I retract my statement.
He is a good golfer, though.
I'm sincerely sorry. The podcast is over. No, but I mean, you're right. They would never say that. But I've heard some things like that.
Yeah.
Because earlier on, like I remember a couple years ago, I asked Jordan, what's it like to be in the zone? And he goes, the hole looks huge.
Okay.
I'm wondering if there are things like that. I mean, you know, like I'm kind of, from what I'm hearing you say, it sounds like, when you're in the zone, basically your entire experience of golf is just easy.
You're just on autopilot. You're not thinking. You have confidence to not have to think. You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like when you are confident you're going to do something, you don't need to think about how to do it. You just do it. But that's tough to come by because it doesn't happen that often in golf.
Right.
And the key and what the great players have done, in my opinion, is they're able to win when they aren't firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
That's what makes a really good player elite.
Best example of that?
Tiger. I mean, how many times have you watched him hit the ball off the earth? Seriously. You know what a tournament I think of? I think of last year at the PGA Championship. He didn't win the tournament, but he was damn close to winning the tournament. I mean, this is no offense to him whatsoever. That was one of the poorest driving exhibitions I've ever seen.
He would say that.
And he was all over the flag with his irons. He putted. I mean, it was phenomenal. But I'm thinking, like, 99% of the people that drove it where he hit it would shoot 80. And he shot 66. It's just wild. You know what I mean? And so what he's been able to do, he's won 80 times on tour. I promise if you were to ask him how many times he played and was firing on all cylinders, you know, a fraction of that.
Right.
For sure. I guarantee you that. And that's what makes him unbelievable. It's the fact that he's won tens of tournaments when he's not with his B game or C game or whatever he wants to call it.
Well, it makes me think of a couple of things. Like, one is we don't give him enough credit for being super creative,
mm-hmm.
like from the trees or wherever it mm-hmm. is. And the other is when we look at, like, some of the highlighted shots of Tiger's career,
mm-hmm.
they're always from, like, weird spots.
They're not in the middle of the fairway.
You're like, how did you get there?
No.
or even the one that they keep replaying recently. It's the one where he completely, he doesn't duff the chip, but the club just slides under the ball. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it doesn't go anywhere. And then he chips it in and you're like.
The one at Memorial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But just so you know, I don't know if you've been there. The place that he chipped that ball in from is, it just couldn't be more dead. It's amazing, but that's my point. It's like, he's, what's made him so elite is that he can win when he's not playing great. When he's firing on all cylinders, at times he's borderline unbeatable, right? But he's been able to squeak tournaments out where he's not particularly playing well, and that's what it takes to be the best in the world. And I think you've seen that with Dustin a little bit the last couple of years. Is, you know, he'll have some tournaments where he's maybe not putting that great or whatever, but, you know, guy gets it done.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think of one of my favorite moments on the podcast so far this last year has been Alfonso Ribeiro. You know, yeah. He talked about, loves golf, talked about how, you know, he's not really afraid when he plays golf. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, it's interesting. Why? And he goes, well, because I'm not really afraid of any outcome. There's nothing that could happen on the golf course that's going to mess with me.
Sure.
I don't care. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think the way you're kind of talking about Tiger's game is like kind of inspiring me, because it's like, well, you know, he clearly has a deep confidence in his second shot ability.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know, outside of golf or outside of the swing itself, what has Cameron taught you think that's really, you know, made a large impact on your life?
I think the best thing that a golf coach can do is to help you coach yourself when you're in the heat of battle, when you're out on the golf course. And so what I mean by that is, the last thing that I want is to be dependent on him to tell me what to do. I want to learn with him and from him about how, when I'm on this hole on Saturday and I'm not hitting it that good, how I can put a Band-Aid on it and get to the house. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's, in my opinion, the key or the separator of what makes an elite golf coach. And I worked with Jim Flick, was my first real influence in golf. And I mean, he's worked with some of the best players in the world, but he would always call me coach because he wanted me to coach myself.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a very underrated trait. There are a lot of guys that can go on the range and have someone tell them what to do and hit it great. But what does that matter when you're out in competition and he's not there to tell you anything? I've learned my tendencies. I've learned some, what Cameron will call, plays for me to call in order to get things back on track.
Mm.
And I think that's a huge, huge quality and a compliment to him.
We're going to wind up in a second. I just have a couple other quick questions. You know, I could only imagine what it's like to be in your shoes. I've kind of been talking about that a lot, this discussion here. But, like, I know that I, you know, we talked about the U.S. Open, and you're kind of like, nah, I don't want to talk about it. You know, and I'm no fault, right? But I can relate. Like, for me, like, there are things that really piss me off about my own performance, mm-hmm. right? That I'm like, dang, I mean, that was a mistake.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have done that. And I'm kind of trying to learn from you, like, what do you do after basically a bad round? Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, like, what are you looking for? What do you want someone to text you? What do you do? Do you go watch a movie? What do you do? Because it seems like golfers, unique to a lot of other sports, there's no one else they can blame.
Mm-hmm.
No, you didn't get beat.
No one. I beat myself.
You beat yourself?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, the thing is with golf, though, in general, is you can use those to improve. And so what I mean by that is I'm going to be real upset when that's over. But by the time I calm down, I think I do a pretty good job of saying, okay, let me go back and really analyze what happened and move on. It's pretty easy to move on when you play 28 tournaments a week, 28 a year, right?
Right.
And so I know I can, you know, for example, you know, go play in Phoenix. I have a really good Sunday. Really good Saturday. I'm looking forward to a really good Sunday, and just kind of stalled out a little bit. Didn't play an atrocious round, but just kind of stalled out. And I was bummed. I was upset about it. I was pissed off. And I was able to get on that plane from Phoenix to Pebble Beach, and I felt like I had a really good reset with myself and said, okay, here are the mistakes I made. Why did I do that? And what can I do better? And how can I avoid doing that in the future?
Right.
And I think that that really helps me to swallow it more, because I can really look back on every bad round and say, you know, there's an opportunity for me to do something different in the future that's going to help me perform better. And so if you can look at it in that way, I think it's a lot easier to swallow. Certainly some of them are a lot easier than others, but the reality is, one of the first things you said, I'm going to be playing for a long, long time. I'd rather get these things out of the way early and learn from them and be better from them than dwell on them and let them affect me.
Yeah. Well, awesome, dude. I'm really excited that we got a chance to spend some time together. And
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to... I want one of your tour visors. Do you have extras of these? Where do I get one?
Yeah, so if you go in the merchandise tent... No, I'm kidding.
No, you gotta... This is unique,
no, I got you
dude.
Covered, yeah. This I got
is,
you covered.
What is on both sides? It's just... It's
just a tailor-made visor.
Tailor-made doesn't sell this.
Not to my knowledge.
They don't sell it. They make it just for you.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Imperial makes
Maybe we
it.
Can give one away on the pod. Maybe you can
to.
Sign one. We'll give one away.
Love to.
What should we have them do to win it? Whether they need to guess some fact about you that no one would ever know.
Ooh.
Or a piece of trivia, and then you can tell me after we stop recording. What would it be? This is challenging.
This is the toughest question you've asked, actually.
What,
believe it
what
or
do
not.
People not know about Bo Hostler?
Yeah.
Birthmarks?
Oh, God. I would... Why don't we go with... What was the tournament that I gained status on the web.com tour from?
I love it. What was the tournament that Bo gained status on the web.com tour from? Also, I'm curious to know real quick, just before we finish, Monday qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, what is going on with Monday
okay,
qualifying?
I can give you a story, and that's all I'm going to say about it. Okay?
Okay.
I played the Monday qualifier in Phoenix 2 years ago. I had no status anywhere. I paid $500 to play. It was 170 players for 3 spots. I teed off in the afternoon wave, and there was a 62 and 263s before I teed off.
And you got the greens are like waffles.
It didn't matter if I could play in the purest course ever. I had to go shoot 9 under to get in a playoff.
Right.
That's just the way it works.
Brutal.
It's a nightmare.
It's brutal. It's harder than the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
That's insane to me.
Well, you got to shoot 66 pretty much on a given week to get in the tournament.
Yeah.
67, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about
awesome,
it.
Well, thanks for your time. Looking forward to, I'm looking forward to sporting that visor. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's clean.
No, this thing's badass.
What other tour players are like that sick?
A lot of them. I think there's a lot of guys that wish they could wear it that can't.
Why not? Because of sponsor money?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had to finagle this a little bit. But I like it. And
it's
I think,
clean.
Yeah. It's nice. It's nice to have a little different look, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude. Well, thank you.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Have a good week, man.